This is something that everybody who spends time with me knows. I have a habit to really always carry a small bottle of Tabasco, and basically I put it onto almost every type of food I eat. Even in a restaurant, I sometimes pull out my Tabasco and add extra spice, almost no matter what type of food it is.
Okay, do Austrians like Tabasco, or is this something specific to you?
It's not something very typical, so it's more specific to me.
Hello and welcome to this episode of B2B Marketers Can Laugh. Today we're joined with Michael Kumleitner, a legend bootstrapper. Before that, just give a big shout out to B2B Pod Pros, who's producing this episode. Also, my business that helps B2B companies accelerate trust at scale via group podcast sponsorships. Now, in this episode, we cover Michael's entrepreneurial journey, how he learned that people were looking for ways to keep their virtual audience engaged, which led to the idea for Woz.io. We also talk about how brands use Woz.io, industries that can benefit from user-generated content, and the successful tactics he used in building a partner network. Let's jump into the conversation now with Michael.
Michael Kumleitner, he is the bootstrap founder of not just one startup, but two, Woz.io and SWAT.io. Woz.io is an all-in-one solution, Woz solution that helps you turn your user-generated content into an important part of your sales funnel. And SWAT.io is a B2B social media management tool that helps you with content publishing across multiple channels, as well as community management. Michael is based out of Vienna. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Hi, Eric. Hi, everyone listening in. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Now, Michael, innovation can be a new method, idea, or product. For example, there is a product called the Wine Rack. Now, imagine this. It's basically a bra that has two pouches, and it can hold the equivalent of one bottle of wine. So women, when they are out in the town, they can discreetly bring a bottle of wine with them and not have to pay the $30 or $40 depending on where they go and order a bottle of wine. That's pretty crazy, huh?
it's pretty crazy. I'm wondering where you're going with that. My first comment to this product is why only for women?
Well, listen, there's also a product for men, and it's called the Tie Flask. And it's like this tie, and it's pretty thick. And you can hide a bottle of wine in the flask. The Tie Flask for men. Now, when we're talking about innovation, what are some things that companies can do to leverage user-generated content for their brand? And what sort of innovation does Woz.io bring to the market, Michael?
Sure. So I'm a bit distracted now and not to start Googling for the Tie Flask.
I'm going to send you the link after this so you can see it.
Yes, please do so, Eric. I gotta have this one. So thanks for the question. So first of all, how can companies facilitate user generated content? The whole idea behind Woz.io, what we are doing with our product, and not just our product, but the whole notion of using UGC for marketing, of course, is instead of creating messaging and marketing material on your own as a brand, instead build on what your community, what your customers out there actually are talking about you and saying about you. That can be product reviews, that can be recommendations, that can, of course, also sometimes be constructive feedback or criticism. All that is happening out there on social media already. And this is super authentic content that can, when used in a good way, be much more convincing and better selling, better converting than whatever you as your marketing team could ever come up with. So that's the whole idea on how to use user generated content. Now, where does the innovation start and where does this come from? I think the whole idea to use UGC back then when we started was, of course, innovative because it was a new thing. Social media platforms were just getting started about 10 years ago. And the whole idea of collecting these content and using it for your own purposes was, of course, new and only possible once the social media platforms were opening up and offering APIs that allowed us as a tech company and our customers to search and pull in all these content. So there was a lot of technical innovation also necessary to make that happen.
Majority of brands using your tool, Michael, is it mostly just for their website?
So this is where we as a company need to or can only learn from our customers. And a lot of, if you're talking about innovation, a lot of that comes from our customers, because originally when we started out, and that's like 8 years ago, the content was actually not displayed on websites, but only on physical screens, on video projections, on displays. We were very much focused on displaying and putting out the content on physical screens in physical venues, like at a trade show or at a conference. And only later we learned, oh, our customers are also interested in putting it out on their websites. So our widget, our embed became a big thing and is nowadays the more important thing. So nowadays it's more on websites, as you just said, but also on mobile apps, of course. So wherever you can put our widget on, it's not just a website, it can also be a mobile app, and it doesn't stop there. Again, very often innovation is driven by our customers. Suddenly we saw that our widget was embedded on websites that we couldn't access. So actually it was internal websites like intranets or wikis. So customers were starting to use social media content and our widget for internal communication with their team, with their workforce. So that's another way where you can put social media content to use and where you can put our widget to use.
Yeah, I would have never thought that would have been a use case or how brands are using the tool. That's very, very cool. Yeah. Now, if they're not using internal communication, how are they using it for people that are doing UGC content? Are they using like some sort of search functionality? Are they looking for specific hashtags? Like, how would they use the tool?
So again, there's different use cases, really. It can start very, very simple. It can start by a company creating a kind of social media newsroom. And what I mean by that is they would basically use our widget and just push in the content from their own company profiles, from their own social media channels. They will take their LinkedIn channel, their X or Twitter account, their Instagram account, and only use this content. We create the widget and they would put it on their news section on the website or a newsroom section on the website. The idea being that instead of manually updating those newsrooms with more or less boring PR press releases, for example, they would automatically use the social media content, which they usually invest a lot of time and resources in anyway. We can make that very simple to reuse this on their newsroom. So that's a very, very simple use case. But of course, you're right. Usually we go one step further and that means UGC, and UGC usually means hashtags. Back in the day, we even had a word for it. We usually referred to this kind of marketing as hashtag campaigns. I still remember when I was visiting the States, I don't know, about 8 years ago or something like that, I was staying at a hotel and was watching TV, and suddenly I noticed that almost every TV commercial was ending with a hashtag, with a prompt for people to use the hashtag. That was super new back then, and that's where the whole hashtag campaigns and hashtag marketing came from. So to answer your question, yes, when used for typical online marketing, usually a hashtag is used to aggregate, to collect the content from all the social media platforms.
Okay. What types of companies is this really great for? Like, who are your main clients? Is there a specific industry, Michael?
So if you fast forward to 2024, what we can see and what we can really say is that UGC can be useful and is being utilized, in fact, in almost any vertical, in almost any industry. There's the obvious ones like e-commerce, consumer products, stuff like that, where you really can like market the content of your community. But there's also sports, there's higher education and universities, who have been traditionally one of our strongest segments. But nowadays, it really goes into even verticals or industries which you might not consider so not such a good match for social media, like old school manufacturing or pharma or financial services. Basically, every industry nowadays can use social media content to their advantage.
Okay. Other question for you, Michael. The other night, I hosted our monthly B2B podcasters meetup, where me and several other B2B podcasters, we get together, we share the best practices on how to grow our show. For example, last season, I published more than 60 TikTok videos, short clips about my show But this only resulted in getting about 24 followers, and it didn't really attract new listeners. That said, what tactics have you done that failed in getting traction for either Walls.io or SWAT.io?
You mean tactics that did not work out for us and did fail? I guess there were quite a few. So it's hard to choose. What was the biggest fail? Let me think. Well, I would say we had traditionally always had a very hard time in using, which is kind of funny. We are a social media company, right? A social media software company. still we always had a very tough time on making paid advertising work on social media. And that has, I guess, many reasons. Of course, advertising on Google is pretty straightforward. You usually have search intent. So people they know what they're looking for. They're searching for a social media aggregator. They're searching for a social media wall or social media hub. So there's clear intention. That's very easy. We found that way harder to replicate and to do on, for example, when advertising on Facebook. So we had a very hard time on getting any return on our paid investments. Up to this day, it's very, very hard. At one point, we of course understood that we need to use some social media platforms like Facebook, like Instagram, way more on top of the funnel, to create brand awareness for our company, to also educate people that there actually is something like a social wall, and therefore not expect an immediate conversion or an immediate return from this type of advertising. Until we figured that out and understood that, I think we wasted a lot of money. So that is one thing that comes to mind.
Okay. Hey there, fellow marketers. Are you tired of juggling multiple platforms for meetings, webinars, and calendar bookings? It can be a nightmare just setting up a simple team meeting. But what if I told you there's a platform that is super user-friendly and can do all of this? Well, say hello to Sessions. More than just a Zoom alternative, Sessions is like having a personal assistant for all your meetings. It provides meeting notes, makes it easy to share documents and screens, distills key points for quick overviews, and makes it easy for everyone to work on one board. I use it for all of our B2B podcast community meetings, and I love it. One reviewer raved about Sessions, saying, "In a world where remote work and virtual meetings are becoming the norm, Sessions stands out as a platform that takes video conferencing to the next level." Ready to give your meetings and webinars a professional edge instantly? Click the link in the show notes or head over to sessions.us today and try it out for free. That's sessions.us. Don't miss out on the platform that will soon be a leader in the meeting space, allowing you to have better online interactions. Visit sessions.us today. And now, what tactics worked really well for you, Michael?
So in the recent years, what really worked out well, especially for Walls.io, was creating a partner network, a network of integration partners. Let's put it like that. We started only about 2 years ago to do that. Until then, we didn't really bother too much about partners. And that's a shame. Actually, we should have started earlier. Why does it make so much sense? Well, our core product, as you already said, is a widget, like a piece of content feed that you can put anywhere on a website, on a mobile app, into any platform, really. So this is like a natural fit for building a partner and integration network. What we did 2 years ago, we sat down and thought, like, which kind of software products or software platforms are the most make the most sense to integrate our widget. And we came up with two clusters of companies, the first being event management platforms. Mm-hmm. Including things like Hopin or Cvent, every platform that offers an in-person virtual hybrid event experience. Mm-hmm. And the second cluster was digital signage solutions, so software systems that would allow companies to display content on their video screens, TV screens at the office, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we really made a long list of potential partners, did reach out and tried to convince them to integrate our product into their app marketplaces,
yeah,
did the integration work, co-marketing, and that really turned out to be a big driver of growth for Walls.io in the last 1 or 2 years.
Yeah. Were you pretty good at the convincing? Because previously, when I was a partnership manager, companies would reach out to us, either Bonjour or Optimug, and they would want to integrate with us. And so I would have them go and create an account on Crossbeam. And so that way we could just see if our audience matched. Did you sort of like present any proof that this made sense, the partnership for you guys?
Yes. So we very often had to do that. I mean, we were also lucky to some, in some regards. For example, when talking to the event platforms, when we were doing that, that was in 2020, 2021. So, peak COVID and therefore peak virtual events. So, all the events were going virtual and everyone was looking for ways to keep their virtual event audience more engaged. And we had the perfect solution for that. So for the event platforms, it was pretty easy to convince our future partners, because very often their sales teams already had like strong signals from the market that people were demanding such an integration, such a solution. It was a bit harder with other partners like the signage systems. And in this case, yes, we used things like Crossbeam to really show overlap in our customer base, show overlap in the leads we are working on. That was very helpful. And Crossbeam, and there's similar tools, but Crossbeam, I think, still is the dominant one, is really a great solution when talking about partnerships.
Yeah. All right. Another question for you, Michael. So I recently launched the B2B Pod Pros, which is a B2B podcast network. SaaS brands can work with us to sponsor multiple podcasts in the B2B space. We got our first major sponsor and the company made a little bit of money. Yeah. Now, which leads me to a quote you said on the Badass in Tech podcast. Mm-hmm. You told Summer Mitchell, the host, that when you're building a business, 100% of your revenue has to be invested back into the business somehow. So the question is, how do you know what to invest in and when?
Oh, so hi, Summer, by the way, in case you're listening. My statement was, of course, specifically meant from the perspective of bootstrapping, from a bootstrapping founder, just to make that clear. I think for a bootstrapper, for me, it was always paramount to really reinvest all our profit. And I'll be honest with you, there's a lot of trial and error here, like identifying the areas where you invest first. For me as a bootstrapper and also solo founder, I usually was in a position where I had to do a lot of jobs in the beginning myself. So I started to develop myself. I was a software developer originally. Then I noticed, okay, there are people doing the development work better than me. So I handed that over. And then I focused on marketing. And then I thought, like, okay, maybe I need someone to sell as well. Then I did sales. So I did this step by step. And every time I moved to a different focus area, a different job, I had to invest in people to take over and professionalize what I did before. But it was more like an organic way to do things, one after the other, step by step, and also like a lot of trial and error. But I think you have to figure out really what is your go-to-market, and then really see, like, if you're more product-led, then of course, for me, like the engineering and product is like the basis. You will have to have a good SaaS product anyway. But then if you go PLG, product-led growth, you will probably invest earlier in marketing. Whereas if you choose a sales dominant or sales focused model, go-to-market model, then you will invest into your sales team before that, maybe. So I think that the GTM, the go-to-market, really also defines where you're going to invest first.
Yep. I think that's going to be my focus, the sales focus. All right.
Yep.
I'll probably test Google Ads, then maybe LinkedIn Ads, or LinkedIn, what are they calling it? The blog post that you can advertise on.
It was used to be the Pulse post, but I think they have now a different name. Sorry, I'm not.
Yeah, sure. I forgot the name of it too. Yeah. And I even heard TikTok. I'm not TikTok, but Twitter or X. Is a really good channel now because the inventory is pretty cheap. At least that's what I've heard. So I may even consider that.
I think it's definitely worth a try, especially for tech products or media products. I think that's a good match still for trying out advertising on X.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Yep. Okay, another question for you. So one of the things I'm trying to do to elevate the members' participation in my podcast community is gamify it. So for example, members, they get points when they do certain things to support another member. If they give another podcaster a nice review on Apple, they get points. If they recommend someone who would be a good guest, they get points. Is there something that you do to elevate your customers' experience when they sign up for walls.io or swat.io, Michael?
So of course we do a lot to elevate the experience, but we don't have like a gamification element per se, like you've just described. It's a great idea, of course, for you in your line of business. But for us, elevating the customer experience usually means we have to shine, in direct communication with our customers. That begins, with, the day to day customer service, which we really take a lot of pride and value in. Of course, it has to do with customer success management, like being good at doing onboardings and understanding the problems that a customer wants to solve, coming up with innovative ideas and solutions when they're creating their first social media wall, advising them on other potential use cases, being really like very close to the customer and understanding their needs. That is how we usually elevate them and make sure that they get the value that they are looking for in our product.
Okay. All right. Now we come to the rapid fire section. Just give me the first answer that pops into your head. You ready, Michael?
Shoot.
Okay. Before you run for president, you must destroy all evidence of your involvement with blank. Fill in the blank.
I guess I would have to look through my early days of my Facebook post.
Okay. All right. Next question. A time you were someone's hero. What did you do, Michael?
Sorry, once again?
A time you were someone's hero.
Oh, well, I don't know if I'm someone's hero, to be honest. I'm blank here. Sorry. I hope we,
Okay.
I'm really blank.
No problem. Next one. What is something that people don't know about you? They're not going to see this on your LinkedIn profile.
All right. Oh, well, there's a lot of things that I don't have on my LinkedIn profile. What the public probably doesn't know, but good friends about me know, is that I really, really love Greece. That's my favorite country to hang out, and I usually spend 1 or 2 weeks each year there, just relaxing. I love the people, I love the country, the food, everything. So this is one of my biggest, it's not a secret, but it's not on my LinkedIn profile.
All right. We're planning our first trip there. I've never been, but we're going to try to go in June. So I'm very excited.
Well, let me know once it gets the specific. I can give you a ton of recommendations.
Okay. Next question. What is a funny fear that you have? You know, my wife, she's scared of spiders. Yeah. What about you? Are you scared of anything, Michael?
I'm not super scared, but I do have a regular, it's funny because I don't have any scare of flying or flights in real life, but I still have quite regular nightmares about flying, like planes crashing and stuff like that. It's really, but I think it's actually funny. It's not like I'm super scared, but I have these regular recurring nightmares about flying.
That's crazy. Okay. Last question for you. All right, what's an unusual food or drink that you enjoy?
There's not an unusual food, but again, this is something that everybody who spends time with me knows. I have a habit to really always carry a small bottle of Tabasco, and basically I put it onto almost every type of food I eat. Even in a restaurant, I sometimes pull out my Tabasco and add extra spice, almost no matter what type of food it is.
Okay, do Austrians like Tabasco, or is this something specific to you?
It's not something very typical, so it's more specific to me. I mean, I like spicy food in general, but this habit of having like my own extra bottle of Tabasco, I have one here at the office, for example, sometimes when I go to vacation. So that's more like a Michael thing, I guess. Yeah,
you're the first European I know who likes Tabasco. When did you first have this?
Oh, that must be decades ago. I think this habit started at least 15 years. Something like that. So forever. It feels forever.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. Michael Kubleitner, thanks for coming on Innovators Can Laugh.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Eric. I did laugh.
It was a pleasure. For everybody listening, this is Michael Kubleitner. I'll put links to his LinkedIn profile and his companies in the show notes. And if you enjoy this, tell somebody about it and hit that subscribe button. It's how we grow. I'd really appreciate it. Until next week, this is Eric signing off. All right. Thank you so much, Michael, for coming on. I appreciate how you were very open about your ups and downs as a bootstrapper and what you were willing to share. Thanks to B2B Pod Pros for producing this. And of course, big thanks to you for listening.